On the Ground is produced by the Global NGO Executive Committee, a storied nonprofit that has for 60 years partnered with the United Nations to guarantee a voice at the decision-making table for civil society leaders. GNEC offers services to more than 1,600 UN-vetted global NGOs, which are on the front lines of tackling the most pressing issues of our time. I'm Adrienne Berg, a member of the NGO Committee on Aging New York and the host of On the Ground.
Hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg. And of course, this is On the Ground, and it is the podcast of GNEC. Now, what GNEC wants to do is show you what's working in the field of civil society. But some of the issues are pretty tough nuts to crack. And today we're going to be talking about something that has been a very difficult issue, and that is elder abuse. We want you to gear up for June 15th, which is the day elder abuse. And it's something that you can participate in. And you'll see how to do that in the show notes today to shepherd us on our way and to give us some insights into what this means on a global community basis. We have a very good friend of mine, actually, from the NGO on Aging in New York, Gloria Gutman. Dr. Gutman is the Director Emerita at Simon Fraser University Gerontology Research Center and Gerontology Department. She's been awarded the very prestigious Rosalie Wolf Memorial Award on the international category. And she's currently on the board of directors of the International Network for Prevention of Elder Abuse and two provincial organizations in her home country of Canada, BC Community Response Networks and Seniors First BC. Now, her current research and her advocacy is focused on elder abuse in marginalized groups and in ethnic minorities. And we're going to be talking about all of that. So thank you very much for being with us today.
Well, I'm very happy to be able to talk with you this month because, as you said, June 15 is the official World Elder Abuse Awareness Day. But we really want to begin to think beforehand of what are the issues here? And what are we going to be concerned about? And as you've said, particularly, what works and what doesn't? And that's a hard question.
It is a hard question, but let's talk about the definition. Elder abuse. I think even the definition of elder abuse is in flux. When you think of elder abuse and you work on it in your advocacy, what are you focusing on?
Well, the key element in elder abuse, as compared with garden variety discrimination, is that it's a situation, a relationship where there's an expectation of trust, right? And that sometimes gets lost in the shuffle. And, you know, the classical types of behaviors that internationally are considered to be abusive would be physical, psychological, financial, sexual, and the issue of neglect. In my home province, they also include self-neglect, but across the world, it's those first five, and it's the idea of a relationship. So you do not expect that your child is going to be abusive of you. You do not expect somebody that you're married to or that you have lived with for a number of years to be abusive to you. And power differentials are also a key element when we're talking about abuse, that one person is more powerful than the other and is behaving in a way that most people would consider to be inappropriate.
So we have to ask the question, not only is this so personal, and it's an interpersonal abusive relationship, but it's also a power shift. Because when we talk about a parent, we're generally talking about the more powerful of the two versus the child. Then years go by, aging, decline, frailty, changes of circumstances occur. And all of a sudden, it is almost like an assault. Just the fact that the power shift has taken place and somebody who you love and who you thought perhaps loved you is taking advantage of you. Now, this is very psychologically difficult to understand. Is psychology part of advocacy here? Can we change and make a shift just by understanding better? Or is this really a criminal type of offense?
Right. Well, we really do have to think about because psychological abuse is actually the most common. The one that we tend to think about, or the average person tends to think about when you talk about domestic abuse or violence, is physical.
Yes.
And the two tend to go together. But the issue of is less common as one gets older. So if you're talking about young women in a partnership or relationship or even middle-aged, we hear about battered wives. We hear less about battered husbands, but that also needs to be considered.
You say we talk about psychological violence more often when we talk about elder abuse. So, is that the work that you are committed to now? Is that the work that you're doing at the moment?
Well, we actually look at all the types and try to figure out what are the triggers and who is the abuser.
Yes.
It's tougher in the case of older people where you may also have a situation that one or both of the persons in the relationship are cognitively impaired.
Yes.
And so you're getting you can get abuse on both sides of the issue. The other thing that comes about when you're talking about elder abuse as compared, for example, of child abuse, is you have to be aware that an adult has the rights, a set of rights to really make decisions on their own behalf. And sometimes the person is so embarrassed or so afraid of being further victimized or not having any place to go that they will tolerate things. And the person who is a witness needs to consider, are they going to make the situation worse, and or are they taking away the right of that person to stay in an abusive relationship if that's what they think is their only option?
So there's the dependency issue, so that some people, as you say, are afraid. So implementation, enforcement of whatever laws there are very difficult if nobody is reporting it. And yet what you're saying is that there should be perhaps a freedom to not report in certain cases. So again, making this a very complicated issue. Now, when we come back, we're going to talk about exactly what you are doing because you're focusing on very particular populations that can even change the dynamics here of what we've already been talking about. So we will be right back, and we are here with Gloria Guttman. We're talking about elder abuse and its complexity. Those of you who are in NGOs in the arts, those of you who are fundraising because of poverty or food insecurities, in some respects, you've got it easier. You have very, very clear definitions of what you would like to achieve. But here we're talking about a very complicated social issue, and that is elder abuse. Don't you guys go anywhere.
Are you interested in high-quality online SDG education programs at no cost and with a flexible schedule? Through the Global NGO Education Committee, GNEC, and Rutgers Preparatory School, the Innovation Academy is offering a variety of programs that address both local and global challenges that should be of interest to you. It provides an NGO a virtual platform for online courses and programs from top schools and other organizations designed for every grade level from world-class educators. Take advantage of this amazing opportunity to expand your knowledge, be connected, be inspired by NGO leaders and educators. You will get all the information you need at the Innovation Academy at GNEC, GNEC.NGO.
And now we're back. And we're back with Dr. Gloria Guttman. And as we've said before, if you didn't tune in from the beginning, she's Director Emerita at Simon Fraser University Gerontological Research Center and Gerontology Department. She is the awardee of the Rosalie Wolf Memorial Award in the international category. She serves on several in Canada organizations, but right now her current research and her advocacy is focused on elder abuse in marginalized groups and ethnic minorities. So elder abuse is global. Elder abuse is across the board. There's no immunity if you have money. In fact, sometimes financial abuse makes those people with money in a more vulnerable situation. But you particularly are narrowing the look and the populations to what you call minorities and ethnic minorities and marginalized groups. So tell us a little bit about your hands-on work right now.
Well, I'm a researcher rather than someone who is actually on the front lines
Yes.
working with older people who've been abused. And what I'm looking at in particular are what are the characteristics of victims and what are the characteristics of perpetrators? And the key question is, are they different for the heterosexual population than for those who are part of the LGBT community? And within the LGBT community, are there differences between those characteristics, whether you're talking about lesbian or bisexual women, or gay men, or trans persons? So, when we talk about older people, we have to recognize that it's not a homogeneous group. Some are tall, some are short, some are
Right.
smart, some are not. And similarly, when we're looking across people that are being abused, they're not all the same. And we're seeing some quite different patterns.
Janet Sayner, who was the commissioner on aging many, many years ago of the city of New York, said that all babies are the same, but all seniors are different. And we can say the same thing when it comes to elder abuse. Now, let's take a look at this population. People who listen to our show here on the ground know me. They know I live in Palm Springs, which is a very LGBTQ friendly, maybe we'll say ecstatic community, but it's also an older community. Most people, whether heterosexual or in the LGBT community, are retired here. And what you do not find are many people in that community with adult children. Today, that's quite different, because there are many, many young people in the LGBT community that have adopted or have had children, and they are parents. But in the elder group, we think about elder abuse as parent and child. Is that different for the older LGBTQ population because they didn't have children? Are their abusers tend to be different than their children? Are they the siblings or their partners that are perpetrating the abuse?
Yes, that's what we see. And for the lesbian or bisexual women, for example, they may be abused by a brother or sister as well. So family is an issue, partners are an issue. They don't have the children who might protect them from being ripped off, for example. When you're talking about financial abuse,
Yes.
And the latest ones that really worry me a lot are the cyber crimes, where you're getting ripped off via somebody claiming to be a person that's going to help you, or who in fact is victimizing you. And we hear about the romance of frauds,
Yes.
where you've got lonely older people who meet somebody on the internet, and that person actually is going to victimize them.
Now, in your research, you talked about looking at the profiling, let's say, of the abuser. Are you also looking at the profile of the person who is abused? Can we say anything about them?
Yeah, we look at both kinds of things. And what we've also discovered is it's different depending on what type of abuse you're talking about. So, for years and years and years, we talk about loneliness and social isolation. Well, if you're living alone, you're less likely to be physically abused or sexually abused, but you're more likely to be a victim of financial abuse, right? Because you don't have somebody around where somebody gives you a proposal that sounds too good to be true. It probably is too good to be true, but you need to talk those things over with somebody. So it's different living alone than it is if you're living with other people.
Yes.
Does
So
that?
let's talk about that. When you have the research, how does it translate into change? One of the things that we like to promote here is things that are working. And we definitely get the impression that when it comes to elder abuse, it is not working, that we still have it. It's with us and maybe even growing. But have you seen anything that really has improved? Perhaps particularly in the field of financial fraud, because there is information out there, or has it really escalated? Is there something that we can take away that's optimistic with regard to this?
Well, a takeaway, I think, is that it is possible to educate the gatekeepers. So, what I think has been successful is programs that have targeted, for example, the people that sell securities, programs that have targeted bank staff.
So they have
So,
awareness. You've raised awareness.
raised awareness there. I think we've done quite a good job in raising awareness that these types of abuse occur. We've done not as good a job as at taking the next step as sort of what do we do about it. But we do have some agencies, referral agencies, for example. In my community, there is the Seniors Abuse Information Line, where seniors can phone up to what's called Seniors First PC, which is an organization that can direct them to people who can give them some frontline help. So they have a victim services. They've got lawyers who are trained in this area who can help people to protect themselves, or where they've been victimized, to try to get back to some of their financial, or to help them get to a safe place. So
That's needed. Yeah, when we come back, I want to talk about something that you've been very personally vocal about, at least in the meetings that I've had with you. And that is when somebody is not living at home, but when they're living in a senior community and there's abuse, whether we're talking about a nursing home, an assisted living community, we're talking about senior residences, where groups that should be really looked at and monitored have the ability to exploit. And I'd be interested to know whether we're seeing any enforcement or whether we're seeing any change for the better there, or again, whether that issue is escalating. It certainly did not work out very well for COVID. So we're going to be talking about that in a moment. Don't you guys go anywhere. I would like you to know about some of the wonderful things that Gina can do to support you and your NGO. We'll be right back. If you're interested in civil society and NGOs, please subscribe free to the NGO Reporter. We're gathering perspectives from the global NGO community worldwide and celebrating 30 years of connecting NGOs, the media, and civil society networks worldwide to the work of GNIC, its constituents, the NGOs, and the topical issues related to all the UN SDGs. So, how do you get your free copy? Well, simply go to gnic.ngo. And you know, you can also submit articles for the reporter. And if you do, you will be read by UN media
and those interested in civil society, other NGOs, it's certainly worth doing. So please contact our editors and our staff at GNEC, GNEC.NGO.
And now we are back, and we're talking with Dr. Gloria Guttman. And as you know by now, for those of you who have been listening, we're speaking with somebody who's doing deep research in the issue of elder abuse. June 15th will be Elder Abuse Day at the United Nations. There's an opportunity now in the next couple of months for you to take a look and see if you're interested in side events. I'll make sure that it's on your calendar. And there you will see in the show notes here what URLs to look at so that you can get the entire agenda for June 15th, 2025. But April 2025, this very month, is also a very important month for healthcare. And that is who has created April 7th as the International Day of Health. They're focusing on mothers, mothers and their children. And so we decided to flip the script a little bit and look at parents in the later years of their life with Dr. Guttman. Right now, very frequently, people are not living alone with a family member who might exploit them. They're living in some sort of a community, which they often pay a lot of money, and there are strangers that may exploit them. Have you done work in that area? What's your feeling about advocacy there?
Well, there's a difference between what might happen in a care facility situation than assisted living. In assisted living, probably what's more common is common variety bullying, right? Which those of us who've worked in seniors' housing have been aware of for some time, but not putting it under the umbrella of abuse situations. You know, there's always been situations where in a communal living situation, some people form a clique, right?
Yes.
And they freeze out somebody they don't like, and they can be mean. You can have psychological abuse going on in those situations where they make the person feel like they're not worthy of being part of the group, or that there's somehow something funny about them or something disgusting about them, and make a person feel really bad and socially isolate them within seniors' housing or an assisted living situation. When you're talking about institutional abuse, and that's where, you know, you've got the most frail who are living in a skilled nursing facility. Traditionally, the first things we thought about were abuse perpetrated by staff, right?
Yes.
We tend to think of that. But that we have to go much beyond that, because in actual fact, you know, there's not a lot of hard data, and they're awful when they do happen. If a staff member sexually abuses or physically abuses or even, you know, says nasty things to people. But we have to think about who else is in that environment. So the abuse could come from a visitor.
Yes.
And again, you know, situations where it's a situation of trust would be where the visitor is somebody that is a family member. That's what you think about first. But what about if it's somebody who the person has done business with, or that's a care provider of a different type, you know, not necessarily on staff, but somebody who's coming in? Or very commonly these days, people are encouraged to have a companion.
Yes.
And where 99% of those companions are lovely, compassionate people, you still have the possibility that they could be perpetrators.
Yeah. So given what you're saying, I'm fascinated by how you do the research. Now, since research is this first step toward coming to some solutions, and there's so little data, And there's so few people who are willing to even speak up and give you anecdotal research. How do you go about your work?
Well, it's in slow steps, but if you can talk to family members, for example, because one of the other types of abuse in collective situations that I didn't mention before is resident-on-resident aggression. And that's one that really worries me a lot because it's been really swept under the rug. Where I first became aware of it was looking at some videos where in common places, common spaces in a nursing home, we were trying to see who was falling. So turn on the camera and just let the camera run. And lo and behold, one of my colleagues called me in and says, "Look at this one. There's this one man is pushing another one, or somebody's tripping them with a cane, or physically abusing another resident." And so my first reaction was, "Oh, that's not doesn't fall under the umbrella of elder abuse because, you know, sort of what's the trust relationship?" But the trust relationship is that when you move your loved one into a care facility, you are trusting that the people that are running that place are going to look after them, right?
That's a breach of trust when they don't.
And so I keep asking the question, you know, why have we not seen a lot more, particularly on your side of the border, of litigation of places, care facilities being sued?
Yeah, I would suggest that it has to do with the shame that some of this is that the person who's actually the victim is not speaking up. For many, many reasons. And of course, if they are there, once again, they have to create an environment for themselves where they can thrive as best they can. And sometimes what you might call squealing on another person is not the way to go. So with the complexity of this, before we close off, I want to ask you a question that I love to ask all of our guests, and I call it the magic wand question. And I never prepare you for it. It's a part of what we do here. If you had a magic wand and you would make a change, you would be able to make a change with regard to elder abuse. What are some of the things that you would like to see happen?
First thing, zero tolerance. Because too often and for too many years, the excuse has been, well, we don't have a clear definition, or we don't want to take away somebody's rights. But in the case of child abuse, I mean, there's no tolerance. And you, if you witness, it's up to you, and you are, I think, in some place, you're basically compelled to report. Even in spousal abuse, there's more of an onus to try to help the person to get out. But to use as an excuse, well, it's too complicated, oh, you know, throw up your hands, well, there's nothing we can do about it. Or, well, they're old and it doesn't really matter. And that gets into the whole issue of ageism.
Yes.
And that we don't think enough about our old people, and particularly our frail elders, to take those steps. You know, if I report that I've witnessed something and it turns out that it's not as serious as I thought, so, but at least I've done something. So if you see it, speak up. That would be my strongest thing. Or find out who you can refer them to, refer a person to where they can get.
Do you feel that as we baby boomers become older and we go into really advanced age, because of the fact that we do have more education on a global basis, even on a global basis, because women are speaking up more and getting more empowered, it will make a difference? Or do you think that our generation will be the same as the generations before us?
Well, what I certainly hope is that we'll be smarter and tougher and speak up for our rights.
Wonderful. Well, I thank you so much. And you're an inspiration for continued research in this area. You're absolutely right. This tends to be a very marginalized area, even in the field of aging, issues of abuse. We're very much concentrating on how to thrive and health care and longevity and caregiving, and all this is really very important and wonderful. But we do tend to see this as just maybe something not quite as important as all the other issues of aging. And it can be, for many people, more important. And we may be able to one day have some data, some really good hard data from people like you, on how rampant this issue is, so that we do pay attention and we don't sweep it under the rug. So thank you so much. And you know what I'm going to say to everybody else? You can make a change. Don't despair. Keep working at it. This is Jeanette. Never stop making a change in the world.